Howdy, welcome to Drive the Bid, powered by ClassicCars.com. I'm Diego Rosenberg, and right here is Derek Shakey.
That's right.
I keep on wanting to call you Jake Shakey, kind of the inverse of Shakey Jake, a Humble Pie song.
Oh, okay. You'll have to play that one for me.
I have. It just wasn't memorable, I guess. So, shall we?
Yes.
Okay. So first, we're going to have news, and you're going to start off with the news.
Yes. So Porsche has collaborated with an Austrian boat builder called Frauscher. I hope I'm getting that right. And they have created this this very unique watercraft. It's called the Frauscher by Porsche 850 Phantom Air. And one of the most significant things about it is an EV or an electric boat. So this uses the battery and the motors from the upcoming electric Macan, and it's got a 100 kilowatt hour battery, and then part of the architecture of the upcoming EV Macan as well.
Do you notice the Porsche steering wheel?
Yeah. And in addition to that, they, of course, have various driving modes. So they have docking, range, sport, and sport plus. And with that kind of power on board, flat out, it can do 46 knots for you nautical types out there, or 53 miles an hour on the water. And it has a cruising range of 22 miles at 22 knots. The drawback is on a full charge, you can be on the water for an hour.
Does it come with some sails in case you run out of electricity?
That I don't know. I would imagine they'd be happy to furnish those for an additional cost. And speaking of that, the projected cost for this is $590,000.
Does it cost $10,000 to get an extra button on the steering wheel or something like that, the way Porsche does things?
I would imagine so. And if you want to do contrast stitching or a part in leather, I'm sure there's an extra cost for that. Now, the plan is to make a first edition model and make 25 of those. So we'll see. This is supposed to come out next year.
Gotcha. I hope if I had that kind of money, I would know how to pronounce the name of the company.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking because it's Frauscher. So I'm thinking of like
Frauscher.
Yeah. That's like I'm a Hausfrau or something,
Maybe it's Fru. I don't know how to do German. I mean, sprecht in Deutsch. That's all I know. And maybe I got it wrong. But in Berlin, they got a mean falafel.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
All the Turks there.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of... I remember when I was in Munich, there was a lot of doner kebab. Mm-hmm. And then, oddly enough, KFC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so my uncle and I, we would get KFC, like the wings, and the wings were like that big. So he would joke like, oh, we're eating pigeon.
Okay, so it's my news. So I got to admit, when it comes to EVs, I think the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is kind of interesting looking.
Definitely.
It kind of has like this pushing the envelope type of design with a little bit of 8-bit vibes to it.
Which especially the taillights.
Yeah, absolutely. And the headlights. I kind of wish that they would have this more in a sedan form. And, you know, they came out with the Ioniq 6, and that's the one that kind of looks nice and ugly at the same time. You know, maybe from the front it's okay, and from the back it's just kind of droopy.
Yeah, very. It almost reminds me of like an old Infiniti. English car.
Or an Infiniti.
Yeah. That, what was it? The J, I want to say, or J30?
Or I don't remember, but yeah.
Yeah, I get that too.
Taillights, yeah. So anyway, this there is yesterday on Dancing with the Stars, which I conveniently missed. They introduced this special Ioniq 5 model. It's called the Ioniq 5 Disney 100. I got to look at my notes because I couldn't remember what edition. Platinum Edition.
Okay.
Ioniq 5 Disney 100 Platinum Edition. They're going to build 1,000 of them.
Okay.
there is, you can see here, has a special Disney 100 screen with some animated intro and even some Tinkerbell fairy dust.
Okay.
A lot of monogrammed Disney 100 stuff, as you can see here. And, you know, it's, I guess they're all in gold, this matte gold color.
All right.
Not very remarkable, kind of cool, but eh.
Yeah, I like the interior color scheme more than the outside. I mean, the outside, at least it has that kind of, you know, anodized or like matte look to it. To be honest with you, I'm surprised because I can't think of another Disney-themed vehicle or vehicle package. So I'm kind of surprised it took this
Fiat
long.
Fiat Topolino, maybe.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because that, what does that translate to? Like a little mouse? Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, aside from that, yeah. I'm honestly surprised it took this long. But they're in the space now.
Yeah. Now, I wonder how many people are going to be protesting this car because it's Disney.
Oh, and maybe this will fly under the radar. I don't know.
I mean, you know, the people who don't like Disney probably don't like EVs anyway, so.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, I know this would require a little bit of re-engineering, but I feel like with the speaker grills, they kind of missed an opportunity to make those into the ears. Mickey Mouse. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's my news for the day. One more news item. We got Steve Mignante news, and we have no Steve Mignante news. So they haven't updated anything on YouTube, which is a good thing, presumably, because that means that he is progressing little by little. Baby steps as he gets in better health from the encephalitis that he has, if I got that correct. So when we get more news on YouTube, I will be updating you. Otherwise, it's just holding steady.
Yeah. Well, you know, at the very least, it sounds like, you know, moving in the right direction instead of the wrong one.
Yes, absolutely. So next, we are going to have our feature for this week. And do you want to introduce the feature?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So, yeah, we were throwing ideas around, and I thought this was an interesting one because, you know, everybody has different experiences in the car world and the hobby. So, Diego, can you line me up with the first picture just so I know? Okay, right. So, I picked three firsts. Diego doesn't know them, the ones that I'm going to ask him. So,
and vice versa.
Exactly.
I'm just following his lead.
Yeah. So this is what my answer would be to the question that I'm going to pose to Diego, which is, what was the very first car that you drove on a track?
Does autocrossing count?
It does, because okay. That's why I put this car up there. Okay.
So why don't you tell us about the car you first drove on a track, and then I will tell you a little bit about mine.
Okay, so I had the same question as you, and my answer to myself was, yes, autocrossing counts. So for several years, I drove a 1998 Acura Integra LS sedan, and my buddy Jake, there was a period of time in college when he was into autocrossing, and he had a Honda Fit that he put some aftermarket wheels and some Falcon tires on, and out in San Antonio, he's like, yeah, let's go to an autocross event. I was like, okay, sure. I mean, you know, so I just took my car as it was. wasn't the best at navigating through the course, but yeah, that technically was the very first car I drove on a track, albeit at very low speeds.
I didn't think about this drag race track.
Okay, yeah.
Drag strip. Yeah, yeah. I mean, sure. 70 Olds 442, although I would say for autocross would be a 1992 Honda Accord. EX four-door, five-speed.
Okay.
So I did that once in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. So college?
Yeah.
Was it competitive, or were you just out there by yourself?
I don't remember. I was out there by myself.
Oh, okay.
That's all I remember. And I killed the brakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So you did several laps, I'm guessing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, sounds like it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I just never did it again.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. That's kind of a costly trip out there.
Mm-hmm. So my first. Let's say this is the first car that I drove at length, meaning mom's car.
Okay.
Initially in 1987, my mom wanted a Volvo, but it was a little bit pricey. So my dad got this Camry wagon. He got it without us. My dad was telecommuting 2 hours away in DC, and telecommuting is the wrong word. He had a job that he would be in DC for the week and come on the weekend.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, after testing a lot of cars, all of us together, we arrived in the Camry, not because we loved it, but it was a good price point. And my dad got it home. It was like a dealer demonstrator, and he noticed some damage on it. And in a fit of fury, he returned the car and told my mom, go get that Volvo.
So the spite wagon.
740 non-turbo, 1987. They also had a 760, which is a little bit more upmarket. I don't remember how. I wanted a turbo 5-speed with in red, but this gray 740 wagon is what I drove for most of high school. I mean, of course, I had to borrow it from my mom, but this is the first car I drove at length.
Oh, okay.
It's not the car I practiced on. That was a 1979 Pontiac Le Mans wagon.
Oh, man.
So this was what replaced it.
Oh, okay. You know, so when you were driving it, did you...
Take it airborne, yes.
Well, it sounds like you had fun in it. I mean, at the time, you know, because you were in high school, right?
Yeah.
At the time, did you just... Were you embarrassed? Like, oh, I'm driving my mom's station wagon.
No.
Oh, good.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that's a popular sentiment, but I don't remember anyone ever having that sentiment. I think most people were just happy enough to be able to drive a car to school. And in this case, I couldn't drive a car to school because it was my mom's.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, maybe once in a while I was like, Mom, can I take the car to school? You know, like that.
Yeah.
But no, it was never an issue.
Oh, good, good. Yeah, yeah. Because like you said, I think it's probably a popular sentiment, but you bring up a good perspective, which is, hey, I've got wheels. And, who cares?
And I wanted the Volvo wagon with the turbo stick. So it's like, it was more interesting than the sedan.
Yeah. And yeah, so you were already warm to the general design of it.
Yeah. And which I wasn't with the Camry.
Mm-hmm.
I did not like the Camry at all. And there was also like Camry Deluxe versus Camry LE, and the Deluxe had the ugly black bumpers versus the painted bumpers, or let's say, you know, the plastic capped bumpers of the LE, which were more attractive. That was a good car. It was a good car. The first of several Volvos in my family.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So tell us another first.
Okay, so this next one.
Oh, wait, no, you got to go. We got to go back and you tell me about your first car you drove at length, or let's say mom's car.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I mean, it actually was technically. So my first car, which I drove, I think about a year, was my mom's old car. And for years, she drove an 89 Toyota Cressida. And it was white with blue leather seats. It had the built-in cell phone. I think it was a doctor's car before that.
It had the built-in seat belt. It's also probably.
Yeah, I think it had the shoulder belts,
we had
if I remember
cars
correctly.
A rental or something like that. And I thought that was a solid car. It had a lot of grunt for the time.
Yeah, straight six, you know, rear-wheel drive. The reason I got it as my first car was... At the end of my mom driving it, blew a head gasket. So my dad, being a diehard Toyota guy, he had a total of 3 shade tree mechanics transplant in a lower mileage straight six from another Cressida. I want to say it was from the Japanese market. And it was cool. I mean, it was nice to have wheels. Unfortunately, it developed a severe electrical issue that almost killed me. I was driving to a construction job one summer in college, and it was pouring rain, and all of a sudden the car just dies on the highway. So I pulled over to the side. Thankfully, I was able to get there, but it was alarming. I'm glad, you know, nobody was bearing down on me or anything. And then it proceeded to do that again. And then not that long after, it got the Integra.
Do you think that the electrical issue was related to the engine transplant?
It had to be, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess there was a short in there, or maybe water got to a place it wasn't supposed to. I can only assume that's what it was, because, you know, you take an engine out of a car and you rebuild it, or especially you put in a different one and you've got different people working on it. It's never going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Dad. Okay.
But my parents ended up getting the Integra to replace it, and that was a fantastic car. So it worked out in the end.
Good, good. So tell us about, what is this first?
So this one is the car I picked for my question, which is, what was the very first vehicle you drove off-road? And so this one, when I was in college, a buddy of mine, he lived in a house with his girlfriend and I think two or three other roommates near UT Austin campus in Austin, Texas. And I went over there. I just dropped by. I was looking for my friend Evan, and he wasn't there. But one of his housemates, Ryan, was. And Ryan had I guess it was the second generation Land Rover Discovery. And it was, you know, I'd just seen him in passing. But he was a really nice guy. And he said, yeah, he's not here right now. He's like, but, you know, and I guess I saw his disco. I said, oh man, cool. You know? And he's like, hey, you want to go drive it? I was like, sure. And at this time, the old airport, Austin Airport, had been closed because they were going to switch over to the Austin Bergstrom International Airport. And there was an area around the old airport where it just wasn't developed or anything like that. So it was like just open dirt and, you know, ditches and stuff like that. And it had just recently rained. And luckily his disco was drivable, but he, you know, it was banged up. It had a lot of issues already. So he wasn't really ginger about it. So we were driving through, you know, it's a little mud here and there and some puddles and everything. He's like, yeah, man, just drive through the puddle. We had the windows down. And then he had, I guess he did this a lot. He had these AstroTurf floor mats cut to size. So we just drove through. There's mud splashing into the cabin and everything. And yeah, I mean, it was just a totally random act of kindness, and I'll never forget it.
I don't think I've ever been off-road, so I will say the car I've taken off the road, airborne.
It's a Volvo.
The highest. No. It was a 75 Cadillac Coupe de Ville.
Good grief.
In the back roads of New Jersey, I want to say probably Lawrenceville. I mean, in this fuzzy area near Princeton. There was just this really good place where you could just like get a nice start, and it just goes up this little hill and you'd get some air.
Did you have to strap a rocket engine to that car?
No. It was easy to get it up to 100 in the back roads there.
Man.
I mean, you know, within reason, you know, at some point you run out of road, right?
Yeah.
Or deer. I did hit a deer once with it, but I was going the speed limit. It didn't damage the car at all, as you can imagine.
But the deer,
different
story.
Yeah, I felt bad. I had to call the cops. I mean, there may have been a broken leg.
Mm.
Kind of a shame.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Mm. That's what you said right before you hit it.
Yes. Actually, what happened is I had a friend visiting, and I'm like, oh, look, there's a deer. And then it's just like my fingers following where it's going. I'm like, oh, it's in front of me. I got to slam on the brakes. I mean, that was all pretty much in 2 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. That's the tricky thing. You know, you go toward what you're looking at.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Cadillac, when we bought it, had like 21,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably a little bit more than 10 years old at the time.
What year was it again? A 75. 70s, right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah.
So, it ate gas. I mean, it was a difficult car. You know, all that emissions junk, didn't really help cars to run well, which I guess is no revelation. But, you know, it's like not only do you have a car that's eating more gas mileage because of all the emission stuff, but it's not running well. No one could get it tuned right.
I think that's the same argument a lot of modern diesel drivers make. It's, that's why you see so many of them tuned and deleted, because they argue, well, it, you know, it makes it less reliable.
Yeah. So for me, the first car in the high school parking lot that caught my eye, my high school, which was Brandywine High School in Wilmington, Delaware, everyone had a Chevy. They're all primer gray, and I did not like Chevys, and I had nothing in common with these people. These are all the people that would pump gas after school, and that was before they dropped out, and then they're pumping gas full time. Mm. I was just cut from a different cloth at the time, of course. I was no different than them. It's just my parents raised me a little bit differently at the time. And then, you know, afterwards, I guess all the juvenile delinquency kind of caught up with me. So I was not interested. There was this guy, Dave Stibe, that had a 58 Biscayne. Then he got a 68 or 67 Camaro that he, I think, got in an accident in the parking lots. Some other guy, his name was Cy Brong. He had a 70 Chevelle. I think he got caught going like 80 in the neighborhood. You know, it's just that kind of thing. And then this guy, Mark Malin, bought this 70 GS455. It was dark green like this. It had a replacement 72 stage one engine. So it was an upgrade, but it was a low compression upgrade.
Mm.
I went with him to my first drag strip experience. That was in Cecil County, and he ran 14 twos with a stock 72. It was just unassuming to a lot of people in school. And the reason why it was unassuming is not because it's a Buick. I think Buick guys like to think that their cars are unassuming, but I mean, look, it's got mag wheels and a hood scoop. It was unassuming because all the Chevy guys knew nothing other than Chevys.
Mm.
So, but this is the first cool car that I experienced in high school.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a looker, man. Always loved the looks of those.
Mm-hmm. So, what was it for you? Who had the cool car? What was the cool car in high school?
You know, there's two that come to mind. I remember one of my classmates... senior year, like one of the last days of school, you're going to roll your eyes, but it shouldn't come as a surprise. He got to borrow his dad's car because, you know, a special occasion. And it was a early 2000, I guess at this point, it was a 2002-2003 dark blue Lexus SC430 convertible hardtop. Yeah, that was a cool one. And then my buddy Jake, he had a, he still has it actually, original owner, 2002 Suzuka Blue Honda S2000.
Suzuka Blue? That sounds like Suzuki almost. It's kind of confusing. Okay, so that was, that's a pretty cool car, I would say.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So. We actually took it on a road trip, or he was driving the whole time because, you know, it wasn't on his insurance. But
did he let you shift?
No. No, we went all the way from Austin to, what was it, Pasadena.
Pasadena what?
California.
Okay, I didn't know there's a Pasadena, Texas.
I think there is.
Okay.
I want to say there is.
Probably a little bit of everything in Texas, Springfield, etc.
Yeah. It's big enough. But yeah, actually drove there and back in that. Maybe I flew back. Anyway, yeah, those couple of cool cars. My high school, a lot of people had the late 90s, early 2000s, like Chevy trucks and like the Tahoe. But those cars were the ones that stood out to me, among others.
Cool. So what's the first with this?
What, yeah, that's a good question. I forgot. Oh, yes. Yeah. So, this was, as far as I can remember, the very first car that I drove stick in. And, by driving stick, I mean poorly. It was my first time around, in it. And, I remember I was at the house, and my friends, Jake, the one with the S2000, and Nick, I guess they had knocked on the front door, didn't hear them. And then my friend Nick, even in high school, I think he was like 6'4". So he just appears in front of my window, you know? And I was like, oh, scared the crap out of me. But no, I guess that was a different occasion. Anyway, they came by and he had a red 80s 944. And, you know, he was kind enough to let me, you know, try to drive it around the block. And I think I kept the momentum going. There was definitely some, you know, missteps and a little gear grind here and there. But I think, you know, I actually got it out and back into the driveway amazingly. I don't know how, but I think I pulled it off.
So is it 944 and not 944?
I don't know. I don't think it matters. I mean, I'm sure, you know.
I think it does matter. I mean, if you have an Oldsmobile and say 442, the Oldsmobile guys will laugh at you, or at least they'll correct you,
mm-hmm.
you know, versus 442, which is what it's supposed to be. I could tell you growing up, I said 442.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I don't know.
And whatever the case may be, I say 944. I don't know. I thought maybe I was saying it wrong.
But like you think about it, like okay, see, like a 928 to me.
928.
Yeah, like 928 would sound weird. But then 911, if you said 911, that would sound weird. So
hello, what's the emergency?
Yeah. So it seems different for each car.
But yeah, I would hope it's consistent.
I don't think it is. Yeah, because I don't think I've ever heard anybody say 928. Now, 944 or 944, I think I've heard both. But yeah, 911, I don't think anybody said 911.
People who insist on Porsche say like, excuse me, it's 944. Like that? There. I know you say Porsche, which I know is correct. I'm just used to saying Porsche. But
me too. I have to consciously make an effort to say it like that because I've always said it that way. But anyway, yeah, this is the first car I drove stick in. So what was it for you?
I don't remember the first car I drove stick in. I have a feeling it was something in the auto shop that didn't quite run well.
So unfortunately, it wasn't that red Volvo wagon.
No. But let's say the first ones I drove at length that helped where I was able to acquire some skill, I can think of three. My friend Mark Pomage used to have a bunch of Preludes.
Oh, okay. I mean,
this is all in high school.
Yeah.
He had the flip-up headlight one. I think he got the generation after that kind of had that ugly exposed headlights. Had the full-width digital dash.
Oh, okay.
Had like, it kind of was like the one that looked like it was stretched.
Mm.
I think he had one of those two. In any case, the Prelude, I remember driving in Pennsylvania Dutch country in the hills.
Yeah.
Around, the, you know, like where all the Mennonites are. That was a cool car. I really like that car. I could, let's say for an old Japanese car, that's a car I would, you know, an SI, that would be cool. So then I had a friend, Barton Metcalf, his stepsister, maybe half-sister, had like some gym event in Fleetwood, Pennsylvania. So that was a little bit of a hike. So I went with him. He had a regular Camry, probably like 85, 84. I don't know. The one that established the Camry name, maybe that was the first one. I got to drive that. So that kind of built up my stick shift acumen. And then in college, there was this girl, Wheezy Channon, that lived in DC. So, I would, drive with her from Nashville to DC on vacation. And then I would take the train back to Jersey for the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a Jeep.
Oh, okay.
The ones with the square headlights.
Yeah.
Kind of like the new Jeep that no one liked.
The YJ. The first generation Wrangler.
So that was the car that kind of solidified my stick shift abilities.
See, it's interesting you bring that up because you hear a lot of stories of people like, well, the first car I got, it was a stick and I didn't know how to drive it and I drove it off the lot or whatever. And they just learn in that car. But we have similar experiences because, you know, the first time I drove stick was in that car, but it took me, you know, learning here and there on different cars until I got it down. You know, it wasn't all in just one shot, because it's like you pick up pieces here and there and, you know, they don't gel yet. It just takes a certain amount of time. And yeah, when I finally got it all together, it was in a S550 Mustang. Maybe not the easiest car, but I mean, really, once everything fell into place, I was like, oh, this is not a problem at all. Mm-hmm. It was a very, for being a, you know, a powerful car, it was surprisingly forgiving.
So here's my first, the first new car I tried to buy.
Oh, okay.
1999 Pontiac Formula Firebird WS6.
Nice.
With the 1LE package, which is the road racing package.
Mm-hmm.
I could afford the payments, but I could not afford it in the insurance. So I did not buy it.
What? How old were you?
I don't know. In my 20s.
Yeah, well, that explains the insurance then. So what did you get instead?
I didn't get anything.
Oh, nuts.
What did I have?
Did you have the olds?
Yeah, I had the olds, but, you know, that wasn't a daily driver. Did I have the Honda? I had the Honda Accord.
Oh, yeah, the 5-speed.
Yes.
The one you took out on a track.
Yes.
Well, you're still having fun.
Yeah, sure. If this was in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first new car I almost bought. And when I say almost bought, you know, this is... if you want to say the first car that you bought, that's fine. That's a good substitute. But this is the first one that I seriously looked at as mm-hmm. an adult.
Oh, okay. Well, too bad it didn't work out.
That's okay. I mean, if it worked out, I'd still own it.
Yeah.
That's for sure. I mean, that was the intention. Just buy something and keep it.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, so I guess for me, oddly enough, it's the Hyundai Sonata. Because for years, you know, I just had kind of hand-me-down cars, and then I was in press cars for a long time. Got the Bullet at a dealer, but obviously it wasn't new, you know. And so, yeah, it's taken this long, but yeah, first car bought new, 2023 Hyundai Sonata. And like you, I'm hoping to have it for a long time.
Oh, that's too bad. You need a stick shift.
That'd be nice as a second car.
I understand the commute.
Yeah, exactly.
So that is the end of our special feature for this week. So now we will get on to some cars that are listed on Auto Hunter. And the first one is a pick of yours.
All right.
About this one. So folks, this is currently on AutoHunter.com, the auction. I don't know when this is ending. I'm sure you prepared that. I completely forgot to do it again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't do it this time around, okay, but let's just say...
I don't feel so guilty this time.
Yeah, with by the time you all see this, this will end in the next within the next few days. So, yeah, go to AutoHunter.com to check it out, place a bid. This is a 74 Bronco. This one has a 302 under the hood. It's connected to a C4 3-speed automatic and a Dana 20 transfer case. So a little info on the Dana 20. Those had a cast iron housing, and they were made in the early to late 70s. And then up front, it's got a Dana 44 axle. It's got the convenience of power steering and power brakes, drum brakes. Also has air conditioning, which is nice, and dual fuel tanks, which I think is a good combo for having a V8 under the hood.
Does this one have the Marty report?
No, I don't think so. But as you can see, it's got a nice color combo, red with a white top. And then on the inside, they've got the red vinyl and fabric. And also new white door panels and trim panels.
Are the white door panels correct for this car? Or let's say the package of it. It may have some kind of decor package.
Oh, I don't know. But I think it looks nice, the scheme. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so it's a nice... And, you know, we're talking with one of our analysts, Jared, and he said, yeah, you know, this looks like a great candidate for one of the really high-end builds, you know, where they you know, custom interior, Coyote V8 engine swap. But I think it's in that sweet spot because, yeah, you could take it to that place or, I mean, as it is, I think it looks great. You know, it's got some character to it.
You know what's interesting about this? You know, this is a good demonstration of the difference between automobile, let's say car and truck regulations. This key was regulated to be on the steering column as part of a locking mechanism in 1969 for cars, but apparently not for trucks.
Yeah, I guess not. Interesting little bit of trivia.
So my car on Auto Hunter is this 1951 Chevrolet. You're going to have to help me with the name.
Styline Deluxe?
I wanted to try to see if I got it. So Styline is the body style. So like the sedans, like the three-box design is Styline, and Fleetline are the fastbacks. And Deluxe is the trim level. So in this case, all the convertibles, all the Styline convertibles, because there's no Fleetline convertibles, were Deluxes. They were all upmarket, which is pretty typical of the era with the cheaper cars. This one, though, was owned by Steve McQueen.
Never heard of him.
I have. So apparently he used this in the movie called The Hunter. That's from 1979, it says here. It's his last starring role. So this, I guess, I don't know if this is the back of one of the Steve McQueen books about his cars, or this is a showboard. Anyway, you could read all that on the auction. Here's the interior. Of course, it's got either a three-speed manual transmission in the column like this one, or a Power Glide it would have, which was newly available in 51, I think. And probably unique in the low price three, which would be Ford and Plymouth being the other ones. This engine is up for debate. I know we've discussed this. We don't know if this is a 235 Blue Flame 6, or maybe it's been upgraded a little bit with one of the later ones. The valve cover, we know, is not stock for the year, but... maybe one of you Chevy guys wouldn't be able to identify it. Whatever the case may be, that little bit of chrome helps the engine compartment a lot.
Yeah, dresses it up.
And I know in a previous podcast, I have talked about how a lot of these cars I find insipid, the 40s and early 50s Chevys, but they're popular and people love Steve McQueen cars.
Absolutely.
They have commanded a premium in the collector car market. And this one could be yours if you go on autohunter.com. So next, another car that you have selected on Auto Hunter.
Yeah, so this is a two-owner 94 Camaro Z28 convertible. I'm in my heart a Mustang guy, but the older I get, the more and more I like these fourth-generation Camaros. I think it's, I guess it's... like older, people of a certain generation, they reminisce about, the cars from when they were in high school. And these were around when I was in high school. I graduated in 02. So this generation was, around at that time, reached the very tail end of it when I was in high school. So this one is, not only cool because it's a Z28 and a drop top, but it's only has 64,000 miles on it. And, of course, it's before the LS1 changeover. So this has the LT1, puts out 275 horsepower, 325 pound-feet of torque. And this one is a four-speed automatic. So, I think this would be just a great cruiser, Drop the top, get the 90s style, V8 power, dual exhaust.
And forgive me, St. Louis... what's the name of the dealership?
Oh, yeah.
It's the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, Gateway.
Gateway, yeah. They put their watermark on every picture, and I guess PowerPoint just blew up the picture and kind of knocked off their little logo, but those are the people selling it. So what year was this Camaro again? 95?
94.
94. So 93 is when this came out, and 94 was the first year for the ragtop, I'm guessing.
Oh, gosh. I don't know.
I think maybe that's how it went down.
That would make sense. I mean, sometimes that happens. They wait a year for certain models.
So this is my Auto Hunter pick. Now, this may look like a Nova, or let's say Chevy 2. No, Nova, because the Chevy 2 Nova was available as only available as a hardtop in the two doors, either as a regular Nova or a Super Sport. In any case, this is not a Nova. This is a Canadian car called an Acadian. So the trim level for this Acadian is called Canso. And this one has the Sport Deluxe option, which means it has buckets and console and probably some other trim. So there are some differences with the Acadian versus the Chevy 2. You can see the grille. It's got these parking lights similar to what you'd expect on a Grand Prix. That was only in the Canso, or maybe the Canso Sport Deluxe. I'm not sure. Now, this car is modified, of course, so the hood, as you see here, is not stock. Here it has A with the maple leaves for Acadian.
Makes sense.
And these were sold by Pontiac dealerships, but don't call them a Pontiac because you'll piss off some Canuck. Here you can see Canso, and you can see these louvers, which I think were part of the Sport Deluxe package. Don't quote me on all this stuff because the Canadian stuff's hard to navigate, but I think I got it. This is the taillights, which are different than the regular Chevy 2 and Nova taillights, but you can see the resemblance. And here's the interior, which should be familiar to a lot of Chevy people because it looks like Chevy 2 Nova interior. In this case, let's say Nova SS, since that's the one that came with the bucket seats. So Super Sport is akin to Sport Deluxe, or let's say Sport Deluxe is akin to Super Sport. And this one right now has a 383 stroker. Top engine that year was a 327 with 350 horsepower. Actually, in Canada, I'm not sure if they offered that in 67 and 66. I know they did. Supposedly, in America, they only built like six or seven with the L79 327. This one, I believe, based on the data plate, is a Power Glide car, but right now has a stick, four-speed. So don't quote me on that stuff, folks. Do your own due diligence before you bid on AutoHunter.com. But that's a cool car that's currently on AutoHunter. So for you, did I forget? You did two cars, and did I do two cars, or did I forget to do one? I think I forgot. I did the Chevy. I did the McQueen. So I think that's it. I was expecting something else, but I surprised myself.
Yeah, time is
by fast.
Yeah, it goes by very differently when we do this podcast.
I should say that if you look, hold on one second. Let's get this back up. Let's go back to that Acadian before we bid everyone adieu. I believe Chevy 2s and Novas have the backup lights in the taillight lens. And here you can see it in the bumper. So if I do know what I'm talking about, which I'm not going to profess I do, but if I'm correct that this bumper may be Canadian specific and would be difficult to find.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, in some ways it makes no sense. Like, why waste that money? But also at the time, GM wasted a lot of money because they did have the money. And probably, you know, that issue of standardization was not as big of a thing as it is now.
I guess as an enthusiast, it's cool to know that that's out there, that they did at least make an effort to differentiate them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how many people appreciated a little detail like that, but it's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, absolutely. So with that being said, for sure, Auto Hunter, Drive the Bid by Auto Hunter. Driven by classiccars.com. That is the end of this week's episode. Thank you very much for watching and listening. Be sure to press the like button on YouTube if you're watching on YouTube. And thank you very much for doing this with me, Derek Shakey.
That's me.
I'll see you guys next week. Thank you.